Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
Do we here in America really know what persecution is? Yes, Christian business owners have been targeted by homosexual activists to force them to celebrate their lifestyle. Politicians like the mayor of Houston and judges are targeting not only Christian business owners but pastors who speak out against the normalization of homosexuality. Christians who engage in sidewalk counseling at abortion clinics have also been targeted. But compared to the rest of the world, are we really persecuted? Will we be ready when persecution comes? My guest today is Todd Nettleton. He is the Director of Media and Public Relations for Voice of the Martyrs down in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. Thanks, Todd, for being with us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
How did Voice of the Martyrs get started? What's some of the history as to how it came to be?
Well, Voice of the Martyrs was founded in 1967, so we're coming up. We can kind of see our 50th year coming up towards us. It was founded by a man named Pastor Richard Wormbrand and his wife, Sabina. Pastor Wormbrand was himself a persecuted Christian. He spent 14 years in prison in communist Romania because of his Christian work and his Christian activities. Three of those years he actually spent in solitary confinement. He was in a cell that was 30 feet below ground level. For 3 years, he did not see another person. The guards wore padded shoes, so they didn't make any noise. So he was really incredibly isolated. But it was during that time that the Lord really kind of planted on his heart the idea of a ministry that would bless and help people like him, people who were in those prisons. And when he was ransomed out of Romania and came to the West, he began to share the stories of his time in prison. But even more importantly, he talked about the pastors and the Christians and the believers who were still in those prisons. And everywhere he did that, Christians like you and I, the response was, well, hey, how do we help those people? We want to help them. And so the Voice of the Martyrs was founded to really be the answer to that question, to be a bridge between the church in free nations and the church in hostile and restricted nations, like the one where he lived in Romania.
So basically for 3 years, he heard nothing but his own voice.
He heard nothing but his own voice, and actually he writes about what he did to pass the time. One of the things he did is he composed sermons, and he writes in his books that he preached to the angels because there was no one else there. So he would compose sermons, and he would preach in his cell just to keep his mind active and to keep the time going and to keep focused on the Word of God. But incredibly difficult suffering and hardship that he went through. And yet he came out loving the Lord, serving the Lord, and unbroken by the pain and the torture that he'd endured.
Wow. That is so hard for us Christians here in America to really comprehend that. I mean, you know, we are, unfortunately, many Christians are hesitant to even share their faith in a country where there is not the persecution. There's not the situation where the police are going to arrest you on the street corner for sharing your faith, or they're not going to knock your church door down on Sunday morning or Sunday evening simply because you are worshiping God. And it's hard for us to comprehend that. So there's the real need for Voice of the Martyrs to tell us what's going on, because we cannot trust the news, and by and large not going to talk about what's happening to Christians. So we definitely need an organization like Voice of the Martyrs that will inform us as to what's going on. And I was at a conference this past Saturday in Butler, just a little bit south of here, and it was a Voice of the Martyr conference, a very, very well put together, very, very informative. One of the things, and you were there, one of the things that you said, though, is that not all the news coming out of Iran is actually factual as far as what's happening to Christians, that there's actually another religious group that's considered even worse than Christians by the Islamic State. Could you give us kind of an update from Iran? Because you were just recently in Iran.
Yeah, actually, I was in Iraq, you know, we have heard a lot of really tragic information out of Iraq, and there is plenty of tragedy. As I say this, I don't want to undersell what is going on there, because there is very intense persecution. There are literally thousands and tens of thousands of Christians that have been displaced. But, you know, there have been stories that have gone around on emails of You know, every Christian child in this particular village is being cut in half.
I just got that yesterday. No. The email I got, they all been beheaded. They were asked to renounce their faith in Christ, and they wouldn't, and all the children were beheaded. That's the email I got. Yeah.
So those emails are going out. We did not hear stories to confirm that. Mm-hmm. And we talked to Christians from the city of Mosul. We talked to Christians from the city of Karakosh. We talked to other displaced Christians. We heard terrible stories of them being forced from their homes. We heard, you know, of them being robbed of literally everything except the clothes on their backs. Their cars were taken. Earrings were ripped out of ladies' ears. Mm-hmm. They were robbed of everything, but they were allowed to live and they were allowed to leave almost 100%. Mm-hmm. The people of the different faith, the Yazidi people, who are not Muslims, they're not Christians, they were treated even worse. Many of their women were kept or taken. Mm-hmm. Many of their men were simply executed. And so even as we hear, and again, I'm not trying to undermine the suffering of the Christians that has happened in mm-hmm. Iraq, but I think there is a need to be accurate and to be clear. And so you just, when you hear information like that, you always want to kind of check it. And mm-hmm. is there more than one source saying this? And one of the things, particularly as it relates to the Islamic State, because of the nature of the evil that they are doing, they videotape. You know, they take pictures when they attack someone, when they cut someone's head off. So, you know, when you hear a report of every Christian in the village has been killed, well, is there any pictures of that? Is there any documentation of that? Because the Islamic State, they want to document it. They want to create fear. So if there's nothing like that, you know, I just encourage people to double check and check with multiple sources and multiple organizations and be wise about what you accept as fact.
Right. One of the pictures that you had was of, I think it was a wedding hall that you guys had rented for some of the refugees to stay in. Kind of describe what the refugees are facing as they're in a situation like that. Like you said, they were allowed to leave with the clothes in the back, period.
That's exactly it. And so they've been kicked out of their city. In fact, we heard the story of one family that they went to a wedding, and while they were at the wedding, Islamic State took over their town. So, you know, they left in the morning thinking, hey, we're going to a wedding, and then we'll be back this evening, we'll be back home. Instead, while they were gone, their town fell to the Islamic State, and they are left with what they're wearing to go to a wedding.
Wow.
There are so many families who have been displaced with the clothes on their back. They are living, the wedding hall that you mentioned mm-hmm. is basically an open room that has been subdivided off with tarps into 26 rooms. In each of those rooms, there are between 8 and 15 or 16 people sleeping, eating, living, all in this wedding hall divided by tarps. So, you know, you can hear what's going on with everyone else. All these people are sharing a men's restroom and a women's restroom. They have one kitchen that all the families kind of alternate through to use the stoves and the sinks and so forth. So it's a really difficult situation. At the same time, it's better than being out on the street.
That's
because
true.
There are those who are sleeping in tents or those who have been left homeless by this. So that's one way that Voice of the Martyrs is ministering to the displaced Christians in northern Iraq.
And in a situation like that, how can we help? Is there anything specific that we can help, or just a matter of donating to Voices of Martyrs? Because you guys, I mean, you know what best needs to be done in each situation, but in that particular case with those refugees living in that wedding hall, how can we help?
Well, there's two ways. One is just to pray. We really desperately need to pray for the situation in Iraq. We need to pray for Christians who are affected by the Islamic State. You can give to Voice of the Martyrs specifically for displaced Christians. Right now, the main way to help is to give money. We do have an action pack program where people pack the bags, but right now we're still finding out a way to get those to northern Iraq. So what we're doing now is we're taking cash that people have given, and we're transferring that over to northern Iraq, and then able to buy the materials that they need for aid. So right now, the main way to support those is simply by giving money There will come a day, I believe, when we will distribute aid that is packed here in America, whether it be clothing items or action packs. But right now, the situation is so fresh, and we're still kind of making contacts and figuring out the best way to help. And so the best way to support them right now is just through cash gifts.
Funds. Okay, okay. Let's talk a little bit about Nigeria, because one of the speakers at the conference was from Nigeria. What's that situation like? Because we hear a lot is, you know, throughout the news for weeks on end was the kidnapping of 200-plus girls. And of course, all that's not been resolved. They've not been found. I think a few of them escaped, but beyond that, the majority of them are still in the hands of the Muslims. What is the overall situation in Nigeria?
Well, the situation in Nigeria, particularly in the north, and it's important as we talk about persecution. Nigeria is a whole country, but it is somewhat divided in terms of religious influence. The northern half of the country is predominantly Muslim. Many of the states, actually I believe now all of the states, have made some moves towards Sharia law within their states, and that's where Christians are facing a very intense persecution. The southern part of the country is predominantly Christian. There are actually mega churches there that are operating and functioning without interference, without problems. So when we talk about persecution in Nigeria, we are almost 100% of the time talking about the northern part of the country. The big enemy of the church right now is the terrorist group called Boko Haram. Mm-hmm. And there has just been news within the last few days. They have announced a peace treaty between Boko Haram and the government. Our contacts there are saying, well, let's just see what happens. And even since the treaty was announced, there have been more attacks. There are factions within Boko Haram that say, wait a minute, we're not a part of this peace agreement. We don't accept this. We don't want peace. And they have committed these attacks and atrocities even over the weekend. So it is very much in a state of flux. And on top of all of that, there are presidential elections scheduled for next February. So in the coming months, it will be interesting to see how that affects the government response, how that affects the way the military interacts with Boko Haram, and that I've read some speculation even this morning that was really what was driving the peace negotiations, the desire of the president to be able to say when he runs for re-election,
I
took care of the Boko Haram problem, that's in the past, re-elect me so we can move forward. And again, we'll see if that peace treaty is legitimate and if it holds, and how much of Boko Haram lays down their arms if and when that happens.
Wow, it sounds it's more just like it's not like politics.
Well, there is a significant amount of politics. The president of Nigeria is a Christian. The Muslims there want the president to be a Muslim, and so there is definitely a political angle that plays into this as they sort of jockey for position. And I think as we get closer to that presidential election, which is scheduled for February, we'll see more and more of that as time goes on.
So the current president of Nigeria is a Christian. So
that's correct. His name is Goodluck Jonathan.
Oh, yeah. I read something about him. I think it was in relationship to President Obama's threat to not provide foreign aid unless African countries legalized same-sex marriage and legalized homosexuality. I think the president of Nigeria made the news saying, you can keep your money, basically. Which is good for him. I mean, that's fantastic. Several African country presidents have told President Obama the same thing, just keep your money. We don't need that. And the International Day of Prayer is coming up in, let's go back to Nigeria quickly. The speaker from Nigeria, the way I understood what he said was that when Boko Haram came in, initially, just came in as, shall we say, as a representing himself as a good organization, as something that wanted to educate the youth and such as that. Is that kind of what happened, and then their true nature became evident?
That's my understanding as well. You know, when they were first founded, it was like, hey, you know, we want to take care of the poor. We want to make more economic opportunities for Muslims in northern Nigeria. But then it quickly changed to, wait a minute, we want control. And even in the last couple of months, they have watched the success of the Islamic State in Syria and Iraq, and the leader of Boko Haram has declared his own caliphate in northern Nigeria. So what they want now is they want a place, a country, a state that they control, and they want it to be 100% Muslim. And so even if they started out, you know, with a smile on their face and a friendly handshake, what they ultimately want is control and to Islamize that part of Nigeria.
So they want all of northern, all the states in northern Nigeria to be under Sharia law, to be completely under their control and their definition of Sharia law.
Right. That's the key factor, is there are many times Boko Haram is attacking Muslims as well as Christians because their radical brand of Islam, they want everyone to follow that.
Okay.
So even if you say you're a Muslim, but you're not as radical as they are, or maybe you're Shia instead of Sunni, they will attack Muslims as well.
Okay.
And that's, you know, one of the things, as the international community has talked about Boko Haram and why we need to get a handle on it, they have pointed that out. Wait, this is not just a danger to Christians. It's not just a danger to the government of Nigeria. They're attacking and killing Muslims as well. The rest of the world community should join in with this, regardless of how you feel about Christian persecution or religious freedom. This is a group that is simply a terrorist group that is creating violence and animosity and death everywhere they go.
Wow. So unless you toe the line that they have drawn, you are a target.
You're a target, absolutely. And government buildings have been targeted. Churches have been targeted. But as I say, Muslims have been affected by this violence as well.
Wow. And the International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church is coming up on November 2nd. And know that Voice of the Martyrs has a lot of resources that are available, some of them free online. The International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church is, of course, a day set aside for the internationally for us to pray for the persecuted church. How can we best do that?
You know, our hope is that every church will take a little bit of that Sunday, November the 2nd, to pray for our brothers and sisters around the world. As we travel and as we meet with Christians, their first request is pray for us. It's not, you know, give us lots of money. It's not give us guns to fight back. It is, will you pray for us? And their request is not, hey, pray that this suffering and pain will stop. They're saying, pray that we'll be faithful to Christ in spite of the suffering. And so the International Day of Prayer is really an answer to their request. They're asking us to pray, and we're inviting all of the churches around the world to gather together, join hands on that day, and pray specifically for our brothers and sisters who are suffering because of the name of Christ, suffering because of their faith in him. There are churches that will take the whole morning or even the whole day. We've heard of churches that kind of put on an underground church service. Maybe they meet in the basement or they meet somewhere outside where they normally meet. They hand out a secret door knock beforehand so people know how to get in the building and they have to do the knock. We've heard of churches that will stage an arrest. They will have people come and arrest their pastor halfway through the service as a way of illustrating, hey, this is reality in China. This is reality, and you could be arrested when you stand up and preach the Word of God. A couple years ago, there was a pastor, though, the whole week before the International Day of Prayer, he stayed in jail. They actually built a jail cell out on the lawn of the church, and the whole week before International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church, the pastor stayed in that jail cell, and the TV cameras came out and said, Pastor, what are you doing in jail? That gave him a great opportunity to say, well, you know, I'm going to walk out of here on Sunday, but my brothers and sisters in Eritrea, my brothers and sisters in China, they can't walk out. They are in jail. And so different churches will do different things. Our hope is that every single church will do something as a reminder and as a special prayer time for our persecuted family around the world.
We definitely need to remember the persecuted church, because we have become cozy here in America, and we don't fully comprehend what real persecution is. And I know that I talked to the speaker from Nigeria during one of the breaks. You know, he's kind of warning us to be prepared here in America for persecution to come. That's something we need to be aware of, because
it's a bit of a wake-up call, really, for us as American Christians. And you know, one of the ways we prepare is by knowing the stories of those who are going through and who have gone through persecution. When we know their stories, that encourages us. It challenges us. And we kind of are forced to ask the question, okay, well, what would I do? You know, what would I do in that situation? And so when that situation does come, we've already thought about it. We've already said, you know, here's what I would do. Would I back down? No, I would stand strong in my faith. When they wanted me to compromise and sign the document that I agree with the government, well, what would I do? Well, I would not sign the document. So knowing these stories, sharing these stories, talking about them with our children, with our grandchildren, that prepares us for the day. And, you know, we don't know what's coming down the road in the United States.
No,
maybe, maybe persecution won't be here in my lifetime, but maybe it will be. And even, you know, there's some disturbing things that we see as we look around. But we know we have to be ready. We know our children have to be ready. And one of the ways of getting ready is just to talk about these stories and tell these stories of God's faithfulness and his bold believers around the world to encourage us and to challenge our own faith.
Absolutely. And what are the, you were talking about some of the resources there on your website. One of them was where we can write prisoners. Give us a little bit of information about that.
That's true. And our website is persecution.com. That's the main Voice of the Martyrs website. We have a website called Prisoner Alert, and you can get there from persecution.com or you can go directly to prisoneralert.com. But it's a website to help you write letters to Christians who are in prison. And we have the prisoners. We've got their picture. We've got the address of the prison where they're at, a little bit about their case, what the charges are against them. And then you can click on the button that says write letter and go through the process of writing a letter. We have some verses from the Bible that are available. You can put those in your letter. We have some encouraging phrases like, our family is praying for you. You can put that in your letter. And then at the end of that process, you click print. It comes out off your printer, and it's in the language of the prisoner. So it's in Farsi if it's going to Iran, or it's in Urdu if it's going to Pakistan. You put that in the envelope. We provide you with the prison address, the postage information that you need. You put that in the mail and send it. These letters make a huge difference to those who are in prison for their faith. Not just as an encouragement, although it is a huge encouragement, but as a very real practical thing. One of the stories I shared on Saturday, and it's a story that I love, is from Miriam and Marzia, two ladies who were in prison for their faith in Iran. And they were on prisoner alert. There were groups around the world that were encouraging people to write letters to them, and they talk in their book about when those letters started coming and how different it was for them. The guards treated them better. The prison officials treated them better. Even the judge, when they went to court, treated them better, treated them differently after those letters started coming. So they give testimony to the fact that it really does make a difference when we write letters to our brothers and sisters who are in prison.
Weren't those the two that the guards took aside and said, you're causing us all this trouble? And then they questioned, well, how can we be causing you trouble? We're in prison. And then they tell about the guards complaining because they have to read all the letters that they're receiving, because the 2,000-plus letters that they were receiving, and they have to read those before they give them to the girls. That was neat.
Yeah, the guards were very frustrated, but that sure was a good thing.
That was good, though. Absolutely, that was good. So the main website that folks need to go to is persecution.com, and that has information about the International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church and the DVD about the mom in Iran. Yeah, it was in Iran in that case.
In Syria.
Syria. Oh, that's true.
Yes.
Get my noodles.
I strongly encourage people. Actually, you can watch that online now. Watch that video about Christians in Syria.
Yeah.
It will absolutely challenge you. It really asks some very stark questions, and it will challenge you to pray, but it will also challenge your own faith. It will challenge you to think about how much you love the Lord and how much you'd be willing to give for his kingdom.
Absolutely. It asks the pertinent questions. So persecution.com is the main website folks need to go to for information and resources concerning the International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church, which is November 2nd. And any other things, any other ways that we can help?
Well, we just mentioned the conference that was on Saturday. I'm a huge fan of our conferences, and I'm obviously a little biased because I speak at some of them. But,
well, but it was great, though. It was a fantastic conference. The three of us came from our church here in Franklin and went to Butler, and it was a fantastic conference.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, and I love the conferences. I tell people, you know, if you want to know what it's like to go to a house church service in China, the closest you can come without getting on an airplane is to come to a VOM conference, because It is believers gathered together who really have a heart for the Lord, and they really have a heart for His body. And the stories that we tell, the stories that you hear, will be a blessing. They'll be an encouragement. Some of them are hard. Some of them are hard to hear when we hear about the suffering of our brothers and sisters. But I think everyone comes out at the end of the day really challenged and encouraged and blessed. And I've been to about 12 of them this year, and I still love going. So I really encourage people. You can find out more information at persecution.com. But if we come anywhere close to you, please make the effort and go spend a Saturday with us. It really will be a blessing to you.
Yeah, I've definitely encouraged folks to do that. There was even some who driven from like 6 hours to get to the conference on Saturday. So they were definitely very, very concerned about the persecuted church to where they would drive 6 hours to come to an all-day conference on a Saturday. Well, Todd, thanks so much for all the information that you've given us and for the, it's just fantastic, the ministry of Voice of the Martyrs and the tools that you have available to educate us on the need to pray for the persecuted church and the stories that you tell. It is really eye-opening. So I thank you for the ministry there.
Well, you're very welcome, and thank you for coming on Saturday, and thank you for giving us a voice on this program, because we need all the help we can get to share these stories and to encourage the American church.
Yes, absolutely. Will you take care, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in the efforts to defend traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA by writing to Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania 16323, or by visiting their website at www.afafpa.org.